Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters, and it's still the Ides of March, so be careful of people named Brutus.
I think it's called Putin. And that's five letters. That could be a Wordle thing.
See? Right. Yeah, I should actually, I'll check this Cambridge street list and see if there's anybody named Brutus. And if it's in my neighborhood, I will lock the door. So,
yeah.
So I mentioned it in the last half hour, but didn't really follow up on a little bit. So not that there's a whole lot to be said about Porter Square and the bike lane reconfigurations and all of that, but they did do a minor delay because of necessity, and the council did approve. Since then, there's actually was a letter published locally. From O&P, four city councilors, basically, you know, I forgot the title exactly, but it was something like, it was called Moving Forward Together was the title of the letter.
That's right, yeah.
And it was co-written, co-authored, but I'm sure there was probably one principal author who I think I know. But anyway, it's co-authored by McGovern, Azeem, Carlone, and Zondervan.
Right.
You know, moving forward together, basically, you know, acknowledging there's only a certain amount of street width and we all want to do everything. And so they were basically stating that, well, some things are going forward, but in one thing, we're going to do a little bit of a delay and do a partial build and then waiting for the MBTA to remove the electrical wires from the, because now that the electric buses are now a historic relic, they are no more as of this past weekend.
Right.
Then at some point they can do a bigger a full build of some sort.
But that's going to take a couple of years.
Yeah. The one thing so I don't think that the letter said much of anything substantial, quite honestly. The one thing that did occur to me, and at least one person or several people on the Porter Square neighbors list seemed to also detect this, which was that the one councilor who has by far been the most actively involved in trying to find plausible solutions
is not in that list, right?
Is not one of the authors, right? So basically, you've got a situation where, and this is not the first time I've seen this happen over my the history of watching things politically in the city, but where you got somebody who's actually working hard to get things done, and then another people basically sort of you know trying to shine the light on themselves as old looks. We are the great problem solvers.
And he lives in the area. I mean, Carlone would be the closest to that area, and that,
right.
And then the next changes will affect where he lives, but the rest of them are the other end of the town.
Yeah, but I think that sort of there is a basic courtesy that whoever has been playing the principal role in trying should to find
but common maybe ground he just there, didn't want to support that.
That well, maybe know. So. I haven't spoken with him, so I don't really know. But I at least took note of that fact.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah.
Is that the person who's basically lifting the weight was not actually listed as one of those signers for that. So we'll see. Of course, you know, I think even though this is a letter to a local a website, it wasn't I guess it's still subject to the open meeting law, so you couldn't have more than four signers, probably because there would be a suggestion of collusion, even if it's just in sending a message.
It was an opinion piece.
I know it's an opinion piece, but to whatever degree you have to co-author something which is has anything to do with public policy, that would probably
but
be
it didn't say counselors, it just had their names.
It doesn't
I don't
matter
know how that works.
It doesn't matter. Right. They are counselors, and that's as simple as that.
I love there how are, you cannot say where it was. It's a local website.
It's a weird thing though that we as private citizens can do things much more freely than elected officials because of the restrictions of open meeting law. I personally wish they would make at least a few revisions to the open meeting law, to allow a lot more collaboration out of public view, as long as there's whenever you do it, you basically put a word out as part of the public records that, we met and we talked about this and this is what we did and whatever. So at least it's part of a public record, but these, the hamstringing all of the elected officials as much as they do, I don't think is necessarily a positive.
But I've seen opinion pieces in the Chronicle from Mallon and Siddiqui.
That's two. All right. This was four, and that's not five.
Okay.
But if it hit five, we got a problem, see?
Oh, so four was okay?
Four would be okay, Yeah.
Well, that's what Bennett was for. So let's
move on. That's right. I mean, well, I'm just saying is that's why you couldn't go beyond the four. Yeah.
You just don't like where it was.
No. I'm just saying that I didn't. No, actually, I didn't mind that. Actually, I prefer. You know, I didn't have wind of it at all. You know, it just is what it is.
Because you don't like to read Cambridge Day.
So, no, actually, I read it quite often. There's a lot of very useful things in there. Okay, but you know, also a lot of opinion too.
It was opinion. All right, go ahead.
Another item that's been that actually is meeting at the planning board tonight.
Yes,
is really the next meeting. It was one in a sequence of meetings. Mm-hmm. That is doesn't actually have a business item as such before it.
It's not really regarding a petition.
I mean, it's a curious thing. Like, what is the function of the planning board?
Right.
So
well, that's true.
I can, you know, even off of my shelves here, I can pull out some studies done by the planning board over the years, mm-hmm. back when they used to do planning in earnest.
Right.
They were not spurred by a city council order. They were not being done because they were adjudicating a proposed change.
They weren't reacting to, or they were actually creating that. Yeah.
Yeah. They were actually basically planning, you know, I mean, once
upon a time. Isn't that what community development is supposed to be doing?
The community development department used to be called, they used to be called the planning department.
Well, to me, they're paid to do that. I don't see how volunteers can actually do all that. I don't know.
Well, actually, okay. As long as they're willing to do it, you know, you do have some expertise there, and they all continue to work with city's professional staff in everything that they do, so it's more of a hybrid of a volunteer board together with city staff.
So why do you think it changed? Exercises. Because the community development got very powerful?
You know, I don't know. I think that one thing I do remember, you know, there were plans that were laid out, like the Fish Book, for example, which is the one for alewife planning.
1979.
There were some really great ideas in there.
Yeah.
And it, you know, some of which were carried out and some of which were not. Mm-hmm. There's the East Cambridge Riverfront Plan was something that was an exercise. Dennis Carlone as an urban planning guy was involved in the development of that. And very the interesting involved. Thing about that plan was that when you look at the drawings and the maps and the layout of what they mm-hmm. were proposing, it almost all got built pretty close to what's in there. So it was like, wow, pretty amazing. Yeah. Whereas if you look at the Fish Book about alewife area planning, there was a lot of that were proposed never happened. But part of the reason is the politics change. There was a time when I think, you know, there was almost like an epithet. People would refer to the community development department as the development department. That was like code for when somebody would go up to make public comment saying, you people don't represent us, you represent the developers, right? And, you know, sometimes it was true. I think that part of the role of the community development department was also building tax base for the city during years when they really needed to grow that tax base.
I don't think that's changed. I think more so now.
Still true to a degree. Yeah. I mean, but I don't think it was not in the same way as it once was. I mean, when they were developing and done in conjunction with the Cambridge Redevelopment Authority for the Kendall Square development, that was very much envisioned not as a building a community exercise so much as it was a building a tax base exercise an economic engine for the city to support the rest of the city. So
which
that
it
was
did. I mean
and it did worse, it was it, did. It was yeah. very successful. It's only in more recent years when there's been a shift, and it was actually the old community, the Cambridge Redevelopment Authority, pretty much died on the vine. They had no members. They had one formal member left.
And really? Why did that happen?
I don't know for sure. It was Bob Hilly was still city manager. And I think I can only surmise that there was a belief that ultimately much of the development of Kendall had already happened. And at some point, maybe they would simply transition toward the community development taking over that role.
So that was the only reason for their existence was Kendall?
No, it wasn't actually, but it became the primary central focus of the Cambridge Redevelopment Authority for quite a long time.
So how did alewife and all those towers of
those were not part
residences? I know, but when did that happen? After Kendall?
Well, the growth of in the Alewife area, a lot of that was happened after the Concord Alewife rezoning that happened, I think about 20 years ago, or just shy of 20 years ago. No, not by a long shot. Kendall was already primarily built up.
Okay, all right.
What happened when they changed, when the redevelopment authority had sort of died on the vine, you had to make a decision. The decision was either you basically take it out to the field and shoot it, or you revive it.
Wow.
And city manager Bob Healy then made four very enlightened appointments to grow it back to its full 5-member board. And that included Margaret Drury, Kathy Bourne, Conrad Crawford, and I think Barry Zevin was the gubernatorial appointee. And I'm spacing out on the fifth person on there. And they actually changed the redevelopment authority into a more of an activist type of entity. And a lot of the housing development that has happened within Kendall in since then is very much, I think, attributable to a change in the board of the
But I'm still talking about the other end of Cambridge, where you have 1,000+ units of housing with no outlet. I mean, how did all that happen so easily without anything?
One thing I think is, you know, the way I explained this to somebody recently, I said that in many respects, these sort of former industrial areas in the city were almost like, they were almost like reserve bank accounts. Not for money exactly, but basically of developable land, so that in order to sort of keep the residential tax rates reasonable and whatever, by bringing in commercial development to, you know, basically pick up a lot of the necessary revenue, they basically would promote the development in some of those areas. So the Concord Alewife plan came in, and then you started to see all this housing get built out
it's
there.
It's all housing. It's not commercial. I mean, it's commercial. I mean, it's
well,
private,
I mean,
housing. But still,
if this was in like the late 80s, and actually, I'm not going to make a direct connection between the existence of rent control or not, but once upon a time when rent control was in place, the city didn't really worry nearly so much about housing policy or housing development. They probably, in retrospect, they probably should have, but they weren't. So rent control properties were very undervalued. You could not balance the books of the city on those undervalued properties.
So they actually incur, or they like the fact that all this new housing was going in.
Right. So what happened back then is that the commercial development was really the only way to basically drive the revenue. So, and you, because of the Tax Classification Act, you could skew the rates. So it was like 2.5 times the rates.
Right. That's right.
So they basically would bring one, you know, like University Park came online, right? Then one other came online. Then eventually North Point was starting to come online. And the Alewife is one of the last bastions remaining, or at least the quadrangle portion of the Alewife district. But the triangle was developed, but at the time when that was put in, basically when the zoning was remade to permit housing in all zones, this was post rent control. Then it was also at a time when actually development of housing and even rental housing, not so much condo housing.
This was all rental housing there. I don't think it's condos.
Because actually there was more value in that. I'm pretty sure.
That makes sense. Also for a developer, it would be.
Right. Yeah. So if you're a developer, you know, that was a pretty good investment to do. So that's what it started happening in big ways, you know?
Yeah.
So we don't have as many, I think I'm probably slightly wrong on this, but since North Point is already pretty much sort of laid out as a large planned unit development long-term, it's really the quadrangle may well be the last remaining money in the bank, developable land.
It's a shame that it's. I mean, everyone.
Well, the city should have been. And, you know,
they should have done something about this. They really.
You know, the planning people and the city council should have got ahead of that. Instead, they waited until
they waited and waited until can't do it.
And then some big players came in, bought the properties, and then only afterwards, when there was a potential development plans maybe being floated. Did they then say, whoa, moratorium?
They're not, I know. And that's going to, I mean, I listened to that. That was recently or something. And it's a shame because the original vision of, and maybe this came out of Envision, I don't know, it was light industrial. I don't.
That's
see
exactly
that
right. Yeah. So, well,
you know,
I mean,
shame because that's a perfect place for it. You know.
I mean, I don't want to gripe too much here, but having served on the advisory committee for the Envision Cambridge process, there are a lot of the things that were floated as part of the, not floated, but actually even made part of the final reports that have basically just been thrown away.
And the city council did nothing. They did nothing with this. They could
not
have
only
done
that, but
this,
there are advocacy groups who have emerged since then, basically saying, oh, screw those priorities. We want you to just double the heights and quadruple the densities and do this and do that, you know?
Yeah, well, not necessarily right there, though.
Yeah, I mean, even during the Envision process, I mean, there was a certain amount of focus on allowing greater heights and densities along corridors, you know, but then, you know, then missing middle thing came through and basically said, yeah, why do it on just on the corridors? Let's just densify everything, you know? So that's kind of sort of in abeyance right now. By the way, that is related to the discussion I believe the planning board is having tonight about
single family and multifamily housing, right?
Yeah. Okay. So Patty Nolan had a committee meeting, a couple of years ago. To begin a discussion about relaxing certain requirements about single family zoning. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a lot of consensus, like, we ought to allow some more flexibility in those zones.
Right.
But then other parties sort of got into the fray and basically say, well, let's just eliminate all single family zoning straight away with the caveat that, oh, but, you know, you could still build a single family home if you wanted to. But, you know, in a way, it's sort of like saying, like, well, let's just change the zoning to allow laboratories to be built. But, you know, if property owner could still buy the property and still build a single family house, which will never happen. You know,
what now, do you mean?
Well, I mean, the thing is, just because you say that you can still build a certain type of structure, and again, I'm not proposing that single family homing is the be all end all of anything here. But, you know, if you change the zoning that basically allows far greater development potential, then, you know, sure, if you're a billionaire and you want to keep a nice single family home there, when the property changes hands, you purchase it and because you want to have your nice little mansion there, then I guess you can afford to do it. But if a property developer comes in and says, I'm going to buy that property, and yes, it's no longer zoned for single family, but I can build now up to five stories or something like that.
Going to happen. That's not what they're saying.
Well,
if they actually got to that, it wouldn't be five stories. It would be, you can make this into a house that has four units in it or something. That's what
I think ultimately there are a lot of voices.
You'll never get that far. They're never going to make an A district or whatever it is be a five-story structure.
I don't know about that. The reason why I say I don't know about that
is a lot of pushback.
but there are examples of just on quiet, side street connector streets that have six-story apartment buildings on them, even in my neighborhood. So they're there.
I know, but that's not Brattle Street, and that's not.
Well, I know the Brattle Street issue is another matter here, right?
Yeah. That's, I think it's when you look at those maps of where those single-family houses are.
Right. So the way I'm looking at this though is that it was a healthy discussion to bring that in front of Patty Nolan's committee to sort of begin the conversation. But then it started taking on a life of its own and became kind of politicized and sort of like, I think it's a complete falsehood that's being put out there that, well, we need to adjust this here because if we allow you to build this in a different sort of way, somehow miraculously housing is going to become more affordable. To me, that's ridiculous. I mean, the current environment right now in Cambridge is that if you're basically allowed to turn a single family home into four condos, you're going to get $4 million condos.
Million plus condos. They're all over Cambridgeport.
Exactly. So that's really in the current environment, what's going to happen. I mean, I'll stick with my guns here, say that the only way real affordability happens is when you have across the whole region, you've got a lot of more housing options so that to, you know, I often point to Union Square, Somerville, though I have no idea what the value is in rents and costs.
Oh, that's gone up because of the Green Line. Are you kidding
me? You know it's going to go up. Yeah.
No, it has gone up. But you haven't been over there. It's gone up.
Oh, I have. I go through there all the time.
I
go through there all the
time. I know, but I'm saying you cannot buy a condo for less than $700.
Right. But the point I'm going to make here is simply, I said this during Envision, though it somehow miraculously, like a lot of things I said during Envision, never quite made it into any of the reports or even the minutes of the meetings, because city staff, if they didn't want you to hear it, then they didn't hear it, you know, which is not the way it used to be. When I've served on several boards where, you know, if people said things at meetings, it actually showed up in the minutes. And nowadays, that's not guaranteed at all. I mean, unless you're basically in sync with city staff, you just get vanished, you know, and it's.
But I thought they're doing it all via transcription now, so it actually has to show up.
Not those. No. Only planning board meetings, board of zoning. I think those are transcription. Not those. Not at all. Not even close. But you know, the point I would make, I'll still make here, was that building 1,000 or 2,000 units of housing, you know, over in Somerville will do more to affect affordability of housing in Cambridge than building anything in Cambridge right now. It's the existence of other options is what creates the affordability. Right now, you just don't have the other options. And that's why everybody's sort of squeezed, you know?
Well, there's options, but it's all expensive.
Right, but until Everett and Lynn and Somerville and all these places start to become, you know, having, you know, some apartment building zones in these.
But they are. I mean, have you gone along that?
No, they are.
They're all doing it. But the point is, people want to live in Cambridge, Robert. And not everybody can live in Cambridge.
I'd like to live on Brattle Street too.
Yeah.
So. You know, the problem is, I mean, I come from a background of having grown up in New York City. And in New York City, the fact that you lived in Whitestone or Flushing and you were 20 miles from the city, you still felt you were just New Yorkers, and you'd hop on the subway and you go to work. And I had friends who went into work on the subway every single day. Yeah. And it was no big deal.
Great transit system.
You know, because you had a great transit system. One of the big constraining factors we have around here is that our transit system is inadequate. It's just plainly
you got the Green Line now. Didn't it just open?
And that's a big improvement. Yeah. It actually makes a lot of the housing that will be accessible on the Green Line very viable.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it all being built. So they all were banking on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see where it goes. Right now, the planning board is just having discussions about possibilities, whether that comes out of that as some recommendations.
Right.
With the city, will there be then zoning legislation coming out of the city council? Will the planning board do it? Or will some private organization, once again, or a political organization come in and say, here it is all pre-baked, do this.
I think there's too many. I mean, I was just looking at the presentation that they're giving as we speak by the city, by community development, and there's all those questions are being raised and different scenarios. And I think it's a long process. I don't know.
Some tweaking
that can be done. Definitely some tweaking that can be done, though. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of sitting here feeling a little skeptical about it right now. Because ultimately, I just sort of feel like they're kind of spinning their wheels a little bit here, just waiting for more of a politically driven process that basically just wants to go for broke with density and height, you know. And the fact that, I mean, to me, in terms of single family zoning, I would be more than happy if they simply allowed, you know, if I had a single family home which was oversized and I wanted to operate it as a two family or whatever.
Be allowed. You get special permit, but I think they can actually allow that easy. Now.
But to make the process of you, I mean, if there's an existing property and you want to simply operate it a little bit differently, I don't think city regulations should be onerous if you just want to operate it differently. And in fact, maybe I'm in a minority in this point of view that if I had a somewhat what scale building, and I wanted to, you know, and it was on Brattle Street, just to get everybody pissed off. And I wanted to operate a rooming house, I should be able to do that. Yeah. Simple as that.
Well, that's really going extreme, but I agree with, but that's a whole different zoning. That would be a different thing. But your example of a single family into two family, I don't see why that can't happen, but apparently it can't for some people because of parking regulate or something. It just makes no sense.
So let's address some of those things piece by piece. Then I think we're already simultaneously.
Right, which I think they're going to do.
They're moving toward the elimination of some of the parking minimums. In fact, there's now a scheduled transfer, the very first now scheduled meeting of Mr. Azeem's committee on transportation.
That's right. He's the chair of that. Yeah.
Dealing with the parking minimums is now scheduled for, I think it's in March. It could be April. I'm not sure now.
Okay.
But you check the calendar to see that. But I saw that there today.
Okay.
So, you know, some of those things are happening here. But, sure. But, yeah. You know, I'm.
It's common sense stuff that I think you should be allowed to do.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
That makes sense to me.
But also let's always be mindful of the fact that Cambridge is just one place. And
I know.
It cannot solve all problems of affordability or availability of housing
or transportation.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. We should have bus bike lanes. Sorry, that's my last thing.
I absolutely agree with you on that. You know,
reason why I couldn't be like that.
I absolutely agree with you on that. So let's see. So are there, what are the other things that are sort of coming down? I would say that the city did announce. Sadly, one of our Cambridge police officers was found dead at home in Woburn today, Officer Hudson. They're still trying to find out about this, probably health related, but it's a sad thing.
Really? Not suicide? Don't know.
We don't know. Worth noting. Okay. And the other thing is the city has now put out the call for nominations for the Outstanding Employee Award. They do those awards every year leading up to a mid-May in-person at City Hall awarding of these Outstanding Employee Awards.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, so that press release went out today. So if you know any great city employees, nominate them. I've been sort of toying with a sort of an April Fools-ish sort of version of that,
which is
the nomination is now being sought for the Worst Employee Award.
Oh, that would be bad.
Yeah, just for fun, right? So
I don't do that. No.
Right.
Okay. So, all right. Well, we will not see you till next month. Right?
We'll see 3 weeks from now. Okay. So.
Right.
So anyway, we'll until then. Au revoir, and we'll see you again.
Stay safe, stay healthy, and
be
let's
well.
Hope for peace. All
see
right,
ya.
Bye.